Tango Tango Papa 2048, May 5, 2020.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Cumby, Texas. Cumby is kind of a little place out in the middle of between Dallas and Texarkana along Interstate 20. So it's kind of well outside the Dallas area. It's sort of Interstate 20, Interstate 30. It's sort of well outside the Dallas area. So there's a couple of truck parking areas. Whoa, what caused that? I think the phone did. Maybe I'll try moving it. A couple of truck parking areas that are sort of well outside the Dallas area. You know, it's just a parking area. It's lighted, and it's just four trucks, and it's been here for a long time, and so that's where I came, because it's an easy place to find a place to park. So, and I think not everybody knows about them, although, you know, there's a fair number of trucks in here, but it's not overloaded to the point of overflowing like most of the truck stops are. So... anyway, so I've been home since the last podcast. I'm trying to remember. I guess I should have looked to see when I recorded the last podcast, but it was after I had gotten stuck for a couple of days in Wyoming with no heat, no bunk heater. So... what happened after that, I didn't get it fixed right away. I was still out a little more than a week. And so what I did, I bought, and I might have mentioned this in the last podcast, I bought a couple of, those ceramic heaters, the 12-volt ceramic heaters. And so there were two of them, and, you know, like $20 a piece. And they did the job. They kept me... warm enough, and so I've got those just in case I need them in the future, which there's it's possible that I might, because these fuel-fired so-called S-bar bunk heaters are notoriously finicky and unreliable. So anyway, I was home for a few days, and I came back to work on the March the 3rd, and so today is the 5th, so I've been back to work for a couple of days, they had me pick a load up in Fayetteville, Arkansas, near where I live, and I brought that to a suburb of Dallas, Fort Worth, called Flower Mound, Texas, and that's kind of indistinguishable from any of the other suburbs. It's in this industrial park type area, so with all these, you know, kind of new modern warehouses. So anyway, I unloaded there, and then after that, it was early in the morning. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. I went to the Dallas area terminal, company terminal at Wilmer, Texas, and checked in with them. After, you know, the shop opens like at 6 a.m. and so checked in with them and told them, you know, I needed the bunk heater fixed. and the A service was due, where they sort of look over everything and grease the truck and what have you. Grease whatever needs to be greased. I had a couple of other small issues. And so they finally got the truck into the shop. This would have been yesterday afternoon. That would have been Wednesday afternoon. They got the truck into the shop, and and it came out of the shop. I don't know. It was probably about 10 o'clock, 10:30, something like that. And so I went ahead and spent the night there on the Dallas yard. And then so then this morning they sent a load. They sent actually two loads. The first one picked up in Irving, which is another suburb in the area. And then that delivered in Dallas. So it was a short load. So I picked the load up in Irving, and I went right to the place, the other warehouse where I delivered it, and it came off fairly quickly. And so then after that, I got the trailer washed out, and the next load picked up in Waco, and so I picked that up, and then was able to make it here to Cumbie. The Texas, the load goes to Joliet, Illinois, and so it delivers there anytime on the pretty much on the 7th. So right now I think I have about, let's say, roughly 850 miles from here, where I'm at right now, to Joliet. So I'll make it a good chunk of the way tomorrow, and then the rest of it on the 7th, and then I'm sure they'll come up with some other load. So they got the bunk heater fixed. Now it was kind of cold yesterday all day, there in Dallas. It was like, I think it might have made it up to 57 degrees, and it was kind of rainy all day, and the wind was blowing kind of like mad, so it was not a pleasant day to be outside. Today was the opposite. It was 75 degrees, pretty calm winds, and sunshine, clear sky. So today was about as ideal as you can get. 75 is a good temperature, especially without any wind and plenty of sun. So and tonight, I don't know when I stopped a while ago, I think it's about 60 degrees, but it'll probably get into the 50s, I'm guessing, for the overnight low. So, may or may not have to use the bunk heater, but it's working again, and, so that's the way it goes. But I do have those two 12-volt heaters as a backup plan, just in case something goes wrong with the bunk heater. Then I do have some sort of a backup where I can remain reasonably comfortable. So while I was home, I ended up doing a couple of things that I really had, that sort of were on the spur of the moment. A friend that I have has a 2011 27-inch iMac that he bought new in 2011. I kind of helped him pick it out, and unfortunately Apple has sort of obsoleted it. They've sort of stranded it with an older version of OS 10. I guess they call it Mac OS now. And so that, 2011 machine, and of course he's taken perfect care of it. The thing, is brand new externally, and they decided, it's got an i7 processor. And so they've decided, too bad, it's too old. We're not going to put the new, you want your Mac to have the new version of OS or Mac OS, you got to buy a new Mac. Sorry. So And, you know, he was okay with that. He realized that they would probably strand the asset at some point. Apple has a history of doing that with various their various devices. However, one of the things he wants to be able to do is run TurboTax on it. Now, it ran this year, but the problem was that it popped up and it said, you know, it's going to work this time, but it's not going to work next year. But next year's version will not support, you know, whatever version of Mac OS you have at this point. You know, he was asking me what I would do. And so what I suggested is that he set it up, you know, a couple of things. Set it up so that it would dual boot into into Windows 10, rather. So, you know, he'd be able to run Windows 10 on it, and then, of course, it's going to stay updated with Windows 10 for some time to come. But also, if it were my machine, I would go ahead and have someone swap out the spinning hard drive that it came with for a 1 terabyte SSD. And so that's what he did. I have this guy that a little over a year ago, I took my 27-inch HP machine running Windows 10 to this guy in Fayetteville, Arkansas. It's called Allied Technology. Really nice guy. But in any case, I paid him to clone the drive over onto the 1 terabyte spinning hard drive, clone it over to a 1 terabyte SSD, and install it in the 27-inch HP machine. And I've been just pleased as punch since then, because the machine has an i7 processor. It boots up within about 7 seconds, and it's completely usable. It's amazing how SSDs boost performance. And so, you know, I suggested that my friend do that. And so what he did, he took it to the guy, and so the guy did that. But he also had him just go ahead and, because I think it only had his 27-inch iMac, only had, 2011 machine, only came with 4 gigabytes of RAM. And so he had the guy max the RAM out. Now, I don't know, I didn't pay attention to how much it maxed out to, but so he maxed the RAM out, as well as installed a 1 terabyte SSD with a dual boot configuration, cloning the existing Mac OS drive over to the one half of it, and then the other half Windows 10. And so being that was a Mac, it ended up costing more than, because it's Apple, and it was more complicated because he did add RAM to it. So it was more expensive, but it's a very nice machine, and the machine is more than capable of running whatever code you can throw at it. It runs Windows 10 just remarkably well, and it runs the whatever version of OS or Mac OS that it's stranded with. It's probably a version or two old compared to, because I haven't kept up with what Apple has been doing lately. I've really lost interest in it, so I haven't even listened. I don't even know what version they're at this point. But it runs the version that he has on there, which was he updated as far as he could. It runs that really well from the SSD. Whereas even with the spinning hard drive, the thing would take several minutes. Even with the Mac OS, it would take it several minutes to become, if you boot it up, to become usable. And that's generally what happens with a Windows machine. If it's running, even a modern, fast one, with a fast processor, if you're running it from a spinning hard drive, it's slow to boot up and to become, to the point where it's actually usable. So, but in any case, the guy fixed it, and he got it fixed it all up, and the thing's running beautifully. So I, of course, I have this other HP machine, the nineteen or twenty inch all in one HP. Yeah, it's an HP machine. And so, but it, you know, and it's older than the other, than the 27 inch one that I have. And you know, for some time it came with Windows 10. And for some time now, I thought, well, I could have him, you know, have that guy install a 1 terabyte SSD in it and clone it over. And so I did. So he was able to do that pretty quickly, and it, you know, I was really pleased with the with the results. So, and that machine, I've got it attached to a document scanner, and you know, with the idea that you know, scan documents, and then the documents become searchable, and that way I don't have to, you know, because two or three times or four or five times a year I'll have to go back through and try to dig and find you know, you know, some letter or something, or a bill, or you know, like a tax bill or something. And this way I can scan scan those important documents, because I was doing that before. You know, I did it when it had a spinning hard drive, but it was just, you know, it was a cumbersome process. But now I've, you know, with the SSD, the machine's much faster, much easier to deal with. And of course, the you know, and I've also streamlined what I'm actually scanning. I'm not trying to scan every little receipt from every place, but you know, just the important ones. And that way I can go back through, it becomes searchable, I can go back through and find things that I might need. So I did that. So I don't look at Facebook very often. I've really weaned myself away from it. I think it's really the concept itself is, you know, I guess the initial concept, you know, where people think, well, I'm going to keep track of my family. That's okay. But, of course, it ends up turning into something else. And what it ends up turning into is, you know, you put your little thing out there, and then you, it's irresistible to figure out if somebody's liking it or not, or if they're making comments on it or not. And, you know, it just, it, you know, people end up, because of the nature of it, people end up, sort of doing what they naturally do, and it kind of turns into a gossip, really, to a large extent. It's gossip. And you know, and it becomes irresistible because you're getting a little serotonin hit. You know, every, you know, you try to find, you know, like every few minutes you're trying to look to see if there's, you know, what's new. You know, and it gets a little buzz out of it, a little ego buzz. So, a little brain buzz. And the more you do that, the more depressed you actually end up becoming. You know, it ends up having a negative, you know, because there's diminishing returns. The law of diminishing returns instantly kicks in, and, you know, you're looking for little compliments, and you know what happens with compliments if you imbibe them. And of course, people do that. So, you know, it's a similar, you know, like a story I've told a million times. You know, you get a new pair of shoes and somebody compliments you on your shoes or whatever it is, and you, boy, you just get a giant ego charge out of it. And then the first thing you know, you're addicted to that. Your ego becomes, the wrong side of your ego becomes instantly addicted to that. And then you have to have more and more and more to try to achieve the same effect. People, either the people that gave you the compliment or look-alike, smell-alike people, all they have to do in order to manipulate you is to just threaten to withhold the compliment, or even worse yet, tell you your shoes look like crap, and you look like crap, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and they've got control of you. All, you know, whether you like it or not. So I've just learned to kind of stay away from it. But I did happen to open it up, and I looked at the Facebook Marketplace, which is actually can be useful. And so for a while now, I've been looking at, thinking about replacing I have this old dining room table that came from Montgomery Ward. So that sort of tells you, I bought it in the late 80s. Of course, Montgomery Ward's long gone. The department store used to be a competitor with Sears. Of course, Sears is pretty much almost gone in most places at this point. So, this old table and chairs, and, it's kind of a Formica tabletop, and then it had, the chairs with the chrome bottom and vinyl, kind of a padded vinyl seat, on rollers. And the thing, it still works, but the chairs, the padding is getting kind of long in the tooth, and it's not as padded as it once was, and so they're just not quite, the thing, even though the table itself is fine. But I've been thinking about replacing it, and so I looked in the, sometime back when I replaced my bed, I was looking in the furniture stores. And all of the, it's the style right now, and I guess it has been for the past couple of years, farmhouse this, farmhouse that, farmhouse table. So you have a table that has maybe a few chairs on one side, and then this bench with no back on the other side, sort of like a picnic table. And that's the style for dining, in-home dining. That's the style now. And I prefer more of a traditional type of thing. So I, just kind of refrain from buying anything. Well, I've looked on Facebook, and I've looked on Craigslist. And so I ended up finding somebody had just posted, just a few hours earlier, they'd posted this, kind of a traditional dining table, like really heavy wood with, four straight back chairs and then two captain's chairs, with the seat being padded, like a cane type back. So a total, a total of six chairs, and then this big, massive, very nice wooden table, complete with a glass, piece of glass to go on top. So for $150. So I ended up getting it for $140, and so I got that. I went and got that the last day I was home. I had a dental cleaning appointment, so I did that first, and then later in the afternoon I drove down to Mulberry, Arkansas, and picked the table up. And then my middle brother Kent was nice enough to come over and help me unload that from my pickup, because I could unload everything else, but not the tabletop. The tabletop was like massive, and it was hard enough with two people, kind of getting it into the house, versus one person, it would have been impossible. But got the thing all put together and set up, and so pretty happy with my purchase. So the Facebook Marketplace is actually kind of a useful feature. It really is. So I think it's kind of Facebook is trying to become Craigslist, and maybe a better Craigslist than Craigslist is. Who knows? So, but that's one thing that's actually kind of useful. Now, I don't know if Facebook charges if you make a post. I think Craigslist might if it's over a certain point, or if it's commercial. I think that's how they handle it. So I'm not sure what Facebook does as far as, you know, if you list something, if they charge you or not, or if, you know, they just let you do it. But they advertise to you regardless. So, you know, that's the other, you know, Craigslist does not. Excuse me. So, anyway, I'm pretty happy with that. Because I got the kind of table that I, you know, really nice table and chairs that I wanted. Kind of really traditional, you know, and the things in not perfect shape, but really good shape. And so I'm really happy with what I got. Especially for the price. So, anyway, I've got a small voice file from Ian, and then I've got a much longer one from Joel. So let's get started with Ian. So here is Ian.
How did you make out with your bunk heater, Tom? I know that it would not be very good to be running around Wyoming without a good heater in your truck. I'm trying out the new voice thing that they have on Messenger, which gives you a much better recording button. And in my case, it's a big red button at the bottom of the Messenger page. A lot better than the dinky little thing you had to try to keep your finger on before.
Thank you, Ian. Yep. So as I mentioned, you know, those 2 days that I was trapped there, you know, especially at night, you know, it was kind of hard. But during the daytime, I was kind of able to, when I wasn't inside the truck stop, I was able to, you know, I just kept the thing idling, you know, kind of manually messing with it, and, you know, making it idle. Keep, you know, therefore keeping warm. So I think that first night it was kind of miserable and I didn't sleep much. And well, might have been that second night, but in any case, after that, I think that one night I slept a little bit, but I got up and I idled it, and I got the thing to idle for about 30 minutes, you know, two or three times. Got it really as warm as I could, and then I was able to kind of rest, you know, until the thing, until it got cold again. But after I got those ceramic heaters, then I was fine. But that's not the point. You know, that's the one thing, I tell you. That is the one thing, you know, because retirement, my so-called full retirement age, 66 plus 2 months, is well, it's a little over a year away now. I turned 65 April 3rd, so that's 1 month from now, or a little less. I turn, you know, so I have to be 66, so that would be a year and, you know, 66 plus 2 months, so a year and 3 months from now, I get the full Social Security, which I'm going to apply for and start receiving the money. Now, you know, at that point, am I going to retire? I've thought about continuing to work, but the one thing that really gives me pause about the job that I have right now is winter. You know, driving in the winter, especially driving in, you know, in a place like Wyoming. Or even worse, Colorado. I do not like driving in mountains in the wintertime. I don't like driving in the winter, period, let alone in a mountainous area. And it's just getting worse. If you paid any attention to headlines in the past few days, I think it was on March the 1st, It was either on March the 1st or March the 2nd, there was a 100 vehicle pileup in Wyoming along Interstate 80. And that is a nightmare situation, you know, because, those happen, those kind of pileups have happened, but it seems like they're happening with increasing frequency. Because it used to be, you know, you go back years ago and maybe it happened in California in a, you know, like a long I-5 in the fog. You know, there was one number of years ago in Salt Lake City where it was like a 70-car truck pileup, you know, and it was weather-related. And then there was another one, it's happened in Florida where it was, you know, there was no ice or snow, obviously, but it was super, super foggy. And, you know, people are overdriving their sight distance ahead of them is probably the biggest problem. They're overdriving the conditions, you know, so if something happens in, as far as in front of them, they can't stop in the distance that they can actually see. And obviously the accident in Wyoming, the visibility was limited, but then also the road itself was icy. And so even if they were, I don't know what the visibility was, but even with that, they were overdriving, the road was icy, and so something happens in front, you can't stop. So if all of a sudden the vehicles are in front of you, you suddenly realize, oh my God, they're stopped, you can't stop. And so wham, wham, wham. There are videos on YouTube, I was watching them last night. There's this video, this one driver, a truck driver, had a Mexican accent, but in any case, he was, he was able to stop without hitting anything. He was able to stop, and he was, he was in his truck, and he was kind of, taking the video with his phone, and he was talking, and then he was talking about, all of the accidents, and he could hear the crashes, he could see the crashes in front of him, but he was able to stop, and then all of a sudden he got hit from the back. Another truck hit him, hit his trailer in the back, and it really, jolted. It was a giant jolt. And of course, he said after that his back was sore. But then for a number of minutes, you could hear in the video, ongoing crashes behind him. And so once that kind of stopped, he got out of his truck and he was sort of walking around, and a bunch of people were walking around, which was, and it was really, like ice pellets were coming down and the road was super slick. Which would probably be dangerous just to be walking around on it, but let alone the idea that, what if more vehicles, slam in and then you get pinned in between, already crushed vehicles. But some of the trucks and cars that he walked by were just, mangled beyond belief. So that's the kind of thing that just scares the hell out of me. And that would be why are those accidents? There was another one, maybe another couple of them that have happened in Michigan. Like last winter, there was one near Kalamazoo, if I'm thinking correctly. Like 50 vehicles were involved. Same type of deal. Limited visibility, slick road. Why are those happening more often? Well, for one thing, there's more traffic. And for another thing, people are following too damn close. They're just right on the other guy's ass. Pardon the French. And you think, well, if I'm out there by myself, I can kind of deal with this if I'm by myself. But the problem is, you're not by yourself anymore. You got these other people. You got the people right, you know, right up close to you. And then all of a sudden, if you have to stop, then look out, because the idiot behind you can't stop because he's following too close. He or she's following too close. People, you know, somehow their sense of danger and self-preservation has been disabled. It's been somehow compromised. And, you know, that seems to be a widespread problem. And so that's the thing that really gives me pause. Do I want to continue this beyond what I really want to? You know, so one solution would be to, you know, once I start receiving, you know, obviously once I start receiving the Social Security, I could just quit, which I don't think I don't think that's a really good idea, to just sit at home and not do anything. I think I need to do something. Another option would be to, you know, besides continuing to work and keep putting myself in danger, another option would be to, you know, just go to a completely, you know, a different job that where I was not going. You know, I just kind of stay in the Southeast and, you know, stay in the part that, for the most part, you know, you might just have rain or something, but you're not going to have the snow and the ice and the mountains. So, that would be another option, or just, you know, find some sort of a part-time job that was completely unrelated to trucking. So, but that's the one thing that really, you know, and it seems to be, as I say, it seems those accidents seem to be happening with more increasing frequency. And, you know, it's really a dangerous situation. Of course, the more you're out there, the more likely it is, you know, especially if you're in a place where there's, lots of ice and snow and mountains, the more you're out in places like that, where there's ice and snow and mountains, the more likely it is that something could go wrong. And you could become involved, you know, in a situation like that where, even though you're not hitting anybody, you know, don't overdrive, you know, even if I'm not overdriving the sight distance in front of me, you know, who's to say that the hundreds of idiots behind me aren't, and they probably are. So, you know, there's no guarantee that you won't be involved in something like that. Other than, you know, if the situation's bad, you just stop. But the problem with Wyoming is that it just, all of a sudden, it can be bad. You know, you can go from a perfectly dry road with sunshine to, you know, a few miles up the road, it's snowing like mad and sticking on the road. People are all bunched up, like lemmings, going over a cliff. So, but anyway... get to Joel's comment. Joel's comment's longer. I just played a few seconds of it to make sure it was going to play okay. I don't really know. I think he's going to talk about a variety of topics. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Interaction you want, interaction you get. Well, at least for me, anyway. All right. Listen to your last... Thanks for the last episode. That was some interesting stuff we talked about there. And I get why you might totally unplug from Facebook and whatnot, because sometimes you can get drawn into things. And it depends on how much you enjoy getting drawn into things or not. I don't mind it, especially if it results in good debate. Which sometimes it can. But one of the things that though, is kind of irked me a little bit, especially with certain Facebook pages. I've always loved Star Trek, and pretty much every iteration. And one of the things that kind of disturbs me is how the overtness. It just disturbs me a little bit, but the overtness of some of the political posts that appear on StarTrek.com, and then that becomes from into Facebook, and how Facebook kind of gets involved a little bit, where they've been posting like these things, like, for example, there was one today talked about how in Deep Space Nine, which is a good show, by the way, but how there was an LGBT person, one of the alphabet people, they wrote a whole article on how they thought that the Bajorans were friendly to the LGBT plight and all this stuff. And then, of course, in the picture, they actually showed the most authoritative person you probably saw on Deep Space Nine, even over the Cardassians, and that was Kai Winn, who was the second Kai that was in the show, after the first one died as part of an episode. So I got in a debate, and then, the thing I've always liked about Star Trek, and so, a lot of people, especially social justice warriors, will point at Star Trek and say that Gene Roddenberry purposely made this about social justice, and I'm like, no, not really. The way social justice is today is not how Star Trek was ever meant to be. Star Trek, one thing Star Trek always talked about with me in certain things was how you can find a common ground. All right. So case in point, like one of the episodes in the original series was the one with the two, the two men from Sharon. I think it's Don't Make This Your Last Battlefield or something like that. Anyway, one of the men was black on the left side, white on the right side, and the other one was white on the left side, black on the right side, or something like that, okay? And the one who was, like, the guy chasing after the criminal, the one that was seen as different, he basically can take control of the Enterprise, and had several times in that episode, after they complete the rescue mission, he finally gets the ship, the guy chasing the bad guy, they're both bad guys, I'm going to say that, but one guy who was chasing the other guy down, took control of the Enterprise, eventually brought it to their planet, in where their planet actually had nobody living on it anymore, because they all killed each other. And one of the commenters said that shows that racism is stupid, and I'm like, well, I think we can all acknowledge that racism is stupid, all right? But the episode doesn't really talk, it doesn't really say racism. What it does say is hatred is stupid. Now, what we have, the problem we have in society today, especially between social justice, far-left liberals, and a good chunk of the middle and a good chunk of the right, is there are people like, for example, there's many places where they talk about implicit bias, and these are biases that you don't know you have. And I'm like, okay. And it comes from there. I guess there was an exam, like a college course, of course, where they took they had you take a thing, and that showed you how your extent of your how implicitly biased you are towards one side or the other, which is complete bullshit. Because depending on how you answered it from one day to the next, you could be biased one way, biased the other way. There was too many different ways that you could answer it that would end up resulting in your results being one way or the other. Okay. And the thing that Star Trek always taught me was that you can live with people who have different biases than you. You can live with people and deal with people who have different political ideas and thoughts. The right is accepting, and the right is willing, at least this is my perception, especially if you're middle right, maybe not quite the far right, but definitely if you're a normal Republican, like maybe Trump, okay, is that they all seem to appear to be willing to negotiate on things, willing to, you know, to make amends. And things of that nature. The left doesn't really seem to be. The left thinks that you're intolerant when you want to, you know, if you really want equality, what equality really means is sometimes a black person's not going to get admitted to college, sometimes the white person's not going to get admitted to college, sometimes they're both not going to be admitted to college. The whole thing is if there's only an academic reason for getting you into college, or only a actual reason for you not to get a job or whatever, as long as one of the requirements isn't that you're black or you're white, that's equality. And does that mean sometimes a black person's gonna be quote unquote disadvantaged? I say no, but some people on the social justice left would say yes. And the reason is that black person didn't get in. All right, the black person, even if the black person didn't get in because of purely academic reasons, these people think that it was because of their color, and no. No, that's not the case.
I'm going to go ahead and interrupt because you talked about a couple of different things there. Star Trek. I've always, you know, I've watched most of the Star Trek episodes. There may be a few that I missed here or there. I believe I've watched all of the original and probably all of the Next Generation. There may have been some of the Deep Space Nine episodes that I've missed. And I think there certainly were some of the Star Trek Enterprise? The one that only lasted 5 years, or it had 5 seasons. There's certainly some of those I think I missed. And then I think I've seen most of the Voyager episodes, or maybe a few Voyager episodes that I, you know, some of those that I've missed. So periodically, I'll, you know, of course, all that's available now, and you know, and I don't know if I mentioned it or not. I did subscribe to CBS All Access, so I've watched all of the Star Trek Discovery. You know, there's 2 seasons of that so far, and I've watched all of that. And then, you know, now I'm watching the Star Trek Picard, which we'll talk about that in a bit. but the original, you know, when Gene Roddenberry was sort of in charge of everything, and then, you know, Rick Berman kind of carried on after that, at least with Voyager and Deep Space Nine and... you know, and then Next Generation, because I think Roddenberry died, you know, while Next Generation was still, you know, there were still seasons left, remaining of Next Generation. It was, you know, 7 seasons. Voyager, you know, and Deep Space Nine, I think, were completely devoid, you know, Roddenberry was already dead. Gene Roddenberry was already dead at that point. But, one of the things that you notice is that, yeah, they talked about, you know, they were kind of commenting on all of the things that were going on. You know, of course, that's what everybody always points out, that, well, you know, Star Trek, always, even in the original series, they were always kind of commenting on, you know, the society and, you know, the different issues. But they did it in the context of, you know, they had as an ideal society as possible, you know, they meaning the Earthlings, the humans. They had their, you know, almost like a utopian type society, which they didn't really explain all that well, especially in Next Generation, because they tried, you know, they kind of had it both ways, as far as they tried to pretend like money didn't exist anymore and people were just motivated by, kind of altruistic bettering themselves type thing. That was their big motivation, which that doesn't work. But that's what they said. And then they later on they say, oh, well, but you have these, then they twisted it around, you know, so that, they had money sometimes, you know, especially, you know, the episodes with the Ferengi, you know, and they were trying, you know, and the Ferengi, I think, were sort of like, a capitalist type, you know, like capitalism carried to the extreme. But, it was always in the context of the alien species. You had the alien species that were doing this or doing that that was bad, and they had these long philosophical arguments about what was right and what was wrong. A lot of it was kind of intellectual science fiction. And that really worked, because they could put it in the context, kind of like Star Wars, you know, you put it in the good versus evil, sort of in the context of almost like a cartoon type thing, where you have obviously impossible situations, but carried, you know, acted out in such a manner that it was, you know, kind of realistic, and you could kind of see that this is an argument of right versus wrong, kind of put into, you know, sort of a remote, kind of a non-threatening interface to kind of get you to be able to think about it. Versus the Star Trek now, you know, the Star Trek Discovery, and especially Star Trek Picard. I don't know if you've watched any of that. I've watched six of the, there's going to be 10 episodes in total of Star Trek Picard. I think 7 of them have aired so far. I've watched 6. I still have to watch the 7th one to stay current. They're releasing one a week, and so it's basically like a 10-hour movie. But in this Star Trek Picard, you know, the Federation has deteriorated, and they're all at each other's throats, and you have all the opportunism and they've introduced all kinds of bad language, and the characters in some cases they don't even make sense, you know, the situations they've set up. They don't even really make sense, even though none of it is real, obviously. You know, in other words, they've deviated too far from I'll think of it in a minute, but they've deviated too far from sort of known archetypes. Is the word I'm looking for. They've deviated too far from that, and they've tried to make their own archetypes, but the problem is the archetypes don't work. You know, you go back to the original Star Wars, you have, you know, absurd situations that are obviously impossible, you know, as far as the technology and, you know, this and that. That's obviously, you know, it's just fantasy, But they stuck pretty close, and especially in the first three Star Wars movies, they stuck very close to archetypical stories of right and wrong. And so that those archetypical stories are archetypes for a reason. And the reason is it sort of distills right and wrong down to, you know, some very, very basic principles. And so with this new Star Trek, they're trying to, you know, kind of introduce, not only they're trying to introduce new principles that don't really work, they don't really make any sense, but they've, you know, they're just portraying the humans as sort of devolving backwards, you know. So it, you know, it's not really a Gene Roddenberry Star Trek anymore, you know, especially Star Trek Picard. Now, is it an interesting show? Yeah. Am I watching it? Yeah. Is it entertaining? Yeah, it's entertaining. But it's, you know, you're not going to get any moral archetypical lessons out of it, put it that way. So, you know, as the any kind of drama, whether it's science fiction or just drama in general, really works best when you've got the archetype, you know, when they're really doing archetypical type stories. Archetypes, you know, good versus evil, right versus wrong, the hero overcoming the villains. That's what works. That's what has, you know, staying power. And I like what Jordan Peterson says about, you know, what he has said about it is that, you know, these stories, you know, like he goes through Pinocchio and The Lion King, and he says, are these stories true? And he says, well, of course not, because it's a fantasy, but in another sense, yeah, it's true, because it follows the archetypical guidelines. And so that's what a good morality play does, is it demonstrates those archetypical principles that you can rely on in order to be a successful human being or have a successful human society. And in that sense, it's very real. But because it's transmitting, you know, it's communicating real values, a real value system. Now, the problem with the so-called social justice warriors, the problem is that you know, and it's on the left, obviously. They're just full of hate. And they can detect if you don't share their hatred. And you can argue all day long that you want to see, you know, value people based on their merits and their performance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, regardless of what, you know, what they look like, what color their skin is, that type of thing. Doesn't matter, because they're never going to agree with you, because you don't share their hatred. You don't share their resentment. That's really what it comes down to. And the far right also has, you know, they actually have the same resentment. You know, they've got maybe a different take on it, sort of say they're conservative or what have you, but they're resentful about it. And so that's why people can end up at each other's, you know, sort of at each other's throats, strangling each other, because it's not based on, they're just using the color as an excuse, or, you know, whatever the differences are as an excuse. There, it's all based around resentment and, you know, sort of a resentment-based identity. And a resentment-based identity, regardless of what you say it is, or whether you're on the right or the left, if you have a resentment-based identity, you're wrong. And you always will be wrong. You're wrong by default. You see the world backwards, and you'll make all kinds of excuses to sort of justify your the existence of your resentment. And anybody that doesn't have the resentment is an instant threat. And so that's why the innocent are always persecuted. Or even the relative innocent is always persecuted. is because they see that you don't have the resentment. Now, it's interesting in the case of Donald Trump, they see that he doesn't share their resentment, and they've tried all of the tricks that have always worked in the past with most people to, you know, kind of trip them up, and it just doesn't work with Trump, and it just drives them insane. And it's not only the people on the left, you know, the radical crazies on the left. There's also there's been plenty of people in the Republican Party that the same thing has happened to. You know, both prominent people that you know the names of, and then others that just other people in general. And it just drives them crazy. So, you know, and then periodically they get so frustrated, then they take it out on each other. You know, and so they're still kind of doing that. They're still kind of in the process of eating each other, in a sense. So, but, if someone is resentful, the only opportunity you really have is, can you make them see their own resentment? You know, and you have to really be without resentment yourself in order to, you know, kind of do that. And it's really difficult to get people to see that their entire identity is based around, you know, it's based on resentment. And, you know, and if you, you know, either they're going to deny that they have any resentment, or they're going to be proud of it. You know, and hence the labor marches and the abortion pride marches and the women's rights marches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The, you know, LGBTQ, whatever, PQFDRM. Whenever I see that, you know, hear somebody talk about that, I think giblet. That's, you know, I'm just saying, that's what's in my mind when I hear, you know, they start going through the alphabet soup. I just think giblet. But it's all based around resentment. And if someone is resentful, they can't be reasonable. They can't be reasoned with. It's not possible to reason with them. And when they see that you don't have any resentment, it just makes them that much, you know, more agitated. So, but I don't know. It's best, I've just shut it all off. As I've said many times before, I really have just tuned out. Still know what's going on, but I've just tuned out of it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear the propaganda, especially the news. I reposted a thing on Facebook or I shared it, but it was to the effect of, you know, in the old days, you know, the news was, you know, the news people reported the news, and then it was up to you to decide, you know, what, you know, what your opinion of it was. Well, nowadays, they tell, the news people tell you their opinion, and you, it's up to you to decide whether, you know, whatever happened, if it actually happened or not, because it's like as not, it didn't even happen. So, but, you know, these people are known liars. And so why immerse yourself in that? Why would you do that? I won't, you know, I just refuse to do it. So and I could go on and on. So anyway, let's get to the rest of Joel's comment.
Well, this comes from, like, here's something that I noticed when I was going through life. One of the things that I did when I was in college, I had went to, I was a, what they call a faculty associate. And that means, you know, I was fairly smart. And I worked for the instructor, and one of my jobs was to grade papers. Okay. And when I first started my degree, if you didn't have the test mathematically or English wise to get into to the class, then they basically said, well, you can't come here. Okay. Fortunately for me, I did. But not long after that, you know, I'm sitting here, one or two terms in, and they started a new program. Now, the way my degree program worked was they had a 1DP. Now, D was for my specific degree program, which was Electronics Engineering Technology. Okay, that was an EET degree, not a BE. Don't confuse it with the Electrical or Electronics Engineering degree. It's a little bit different. In any event, and then so it would be 1DP or 1DA, depending on whether you're afternoon or evening. And then they started a 1AP or a 1BP. Or, no, 1AP, or I forget what they called it. They basically, what it boiled down to was, if your scores weren't good enough, you would take an extra term and you would get in. I was actually not a fan of that program. And the reason is that if you get through high school and you didn't have the skills that were on the test in order to get into the 1DP, the main program, or the 1DA, you know, it doesn't matter whether morning or afternoon, but if you couldn't get in, chances are, at least the initial thoughts were, chances are you could not succeed. Now, these developing programs, they seem like to be a good idea, and I'm sure some actually just needed development. But as a faculty associate, being in there and grading the papers, what I ended up seeing was there was a lot of guys, people who did go into, I would say probably, now, keep in mind, when I started my degree program, the class was literally, I mean, there was literally 30, 40 kids in the classroom. By the time I finished, I would say half of that was in the classroom. As time going on, people would attrition out, and people would drop because they would go into something they thought they liked, and it ended up they didn't. So in the development program, it was far worse. It was far, far worse. Now, there were some that actually succeeded. So in that case, it benefited those people. All right. But in the end run, I would say probably 70 to 60% of the people who went into that development class never made it.
Yeah. So Baron goes towards where they have these programs, which, you know, that there is a current kind of idea in some colleges where if you have if you are black, you get bonus points on the SATs. If you're Asian, you actually get negative. You start out with negative points, right? Instead of everyone playing on the same battlefield, they are giving minorities more of an advantage over white people, i.e. the opposite of equality. Liberals think that's a great idea. But in the end run, is that actually helping that person, or is it just letting them fail faster? Yeah. The left always has the most well-meaning things that they talk about all the time. The reality is they don't have a solution to it, just like we don't have a solution to it. And one of the conversations I was having on this post today on Facebook, on the StarTrek.com Facebook page, I said, boy, it must really suck to be a liberal person watching TV nowadays. You have to have your little political things there so that you can remember this crap for Facebook arguments. For me, I just turn on a TV and have fun watching TV. I don't think about, oh, Captain Janeway was a woman. Or what? Or why did, oh, she didn't do this because she's a woman. Or Captain Sisko didn't do this because he's a black person. I just watched the show and enjoyed it. And for the most part, Star Trek, now granted, yeah, I acknowledge there's some of that in there. You know, Nichelle Nichols was put in place because she was black. And that's fine. That's what the character was written for. Okay? But the thing that I always liked about Bob Roddenberry and Rick Berman, who were the two people primarily responsible for most of Star Trek, especially Rick Berman after 87, when Star Trek Next Generation came out, was that there must be a limit. But they did embrace, you know, some of the left will say that Star Trek embraced social justice, and I say, no way. What they did do was they showed that you can get along with people, and that there is a common ground to almost everything. But the left doesn't believe that. I believe that. I'm pretty sure you believe that. But the left just doesn't believe that. They believe it. If you don't believe as they do, you're bad. You're evil. Yeah. And that's all I have for now. But to go back to a little bit of the old school, talking about interactions. I agree with you. It's tough now. It doesn't seems like sometimes people just watch the show to watch the show now. It's not like it was at the beginning where people were constantly going back and forth with things. And one podcast would literally respond to the other podcast, you know. It's almost nowadays people are afraid to do that. I'm not. Enjoy listening to your show. Thanks for doing what you do when you do it. And I'm not expecting you to do a show this week, next week, or whenever. Do it when you want to. And that's the thing. I don't, you know, to me, podcasting can be a hobby and it can be fun. You don't have to make it a job.
Thank you, Joel. It's just utterly ridiculous. The thing, you know, Asians, which are actually a minority in this country, starting out negatively. They've already got strikes against them. Well, I guess because they're too smart, or they, as a group, they score too high. You know, the whole, you know, judging by the group, you know, judging by appearances, that's really shallow. And of course, that's what happens, you know, when your identity is based around resentment, whatever, you know, and there could be a myriad of, that takes a myriad of forms, but they all share one thing, and it's resentment. It causes you to be a shallow person. And real meaning is terrifying. You know, real, you know, if you're full of resentment, and whether you're aware of it or not, genuine meaning is threatening to you. You see it as a threat. So, but the, you know, these people have, you know, they're also, you know, the thing with liberals, they're also charming. Now, there are some charming conservatives, but, you know, there's, especially in the media, you know, the liberals are all charming. And, you know, it's like a snake charmer. But, you know, they, do you really, you know, what I, you know, I like to ask, do I really need the distraction of liberals? No, I don't. I can do without it. And in many cases, I do without it. And I'm much happier for it, you know. So, but, you know, I think it's a good idea to just, you know, for me to just, you know, kind of disengage as far as all this news and opinion and what have you. You know, I've kind of disengaged from it, and I still know what's going on, and I still have my own opinions, you know, and I don't, you know, am I perfect? Absolutely not. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't, you know, I'm just not going to subject myself to the insanity that is out there. You know, Twitter, which I haven't looked, I still have a Twitter account. I haven't looked at it in months. And, but I know it's a mob, you know, there's this entire, you know, it's like a mob mentality. You know, mass hysteria, and that kind of goes right along with the resentment based identities are susceptible to mass hysteria. And of course, the current mass hysteria that's going on is the, you know, coronavirus, so-called COVID-19, what have you. The actual death rate from that is about 1-2% overall. Now, in some populations, it may be higher. The one thing about the coronavirus that might be different is that it is the rate of spread is way up there compared to, you know, some other viruses, other types of epidemics that have happened in the past. But the overall death rate is about 1-2%. Now, if you're in the 1-2%, yeah, that's bad. But, you know, there are other things that are, you know, it's much more dangerous, for example, to be out driving around. Then, you know, you're much more likely to die from that or become injured from that than you are, you know, catching the coronavirus. And, you know, have, you know, maybe having a be in the 1-2% bad outcome. But, you know, flip that around. If you get the coronavirus, you've got a 98 to a 99% chance that you're going to survive. overall. Now, you know, depending on which population you're in, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think it's basically like a severe form of it's like a common cold. I think that's what the kind of the symptoms are, is a common cold type thing, type situation. So, but I believe that the news media and whoever has just ramped this up. They see it by ramping it up and creating all the mass hysteria. I think what they believe is that if they can trash the economy and make the economy bad, because China and, you know, the manufacturing and what have you, if they can make the economy bad, that, you know, somehow maybe, will you know, people will vote Trump out and vote for a Democrat for president. And I think that's what they think, that they can retain power. That's their chance now. Well, I don't believe it's going to work. And they've hyped viruses in the past. If you remember back in the early 2000s, you had which one was it? SARS. You know, and there's been several since then, and they've just made it seem like it was just some horrible thing that's it's going to create some sort of an modern apocalypse, and it's not going to happen. So, one of the videos that I watched, I think it was earlier today, it might have been today or yesterday, there have been something like 58,000 people overall, and it's probably mostly in China, that have actually recovered from it. You know, that was like a worldwide figure, but there's been a substantial number of people that have recovered from it. There are probably a lot of people that have it right now and don't know it. Now, for the past few days, I've had some sort of virus. I can kind of tell, the roof of my mouth, if you know what that feels like when you kind of get a viral infection, that's kind of been sore and it hasn't felt quite right. But is it the coronavirus? I have no clue. Probably not, but it's whatever it is. I don't really sound nasal, at least I don't think I do. And I really haven't, I've had a little bit of, maybe a dry throat or whatever. But so far, so good. But, and that's been going on for probably 2 or 3 days at this point. So, is it going to get worse? It might. I've got some antibiotic just in case. In case it turns into a bacterial infection, which it can, you have a secondary bacterial infection. Yeah, I carry antibiotic with me, but so far, I'm not going to use it unless I need it. And I've got enough experience to know when I need an antibiotic and when I don't. And so far, I don't. So, but I'm functioning just fine. But I do think that is spreading. It's already, because you can go, one of the things I listen to is that you can be infected with it for 2 weeks with no symptoms. And you can be infecting other people. And so it spreads very easily, And the thing is, there's viruses everywhere. One of the videos I watched, the guy was saying just in ocean water, you have a small quantity of ocean water. And I forget how many viruses the guy said were in just in a thing of ocean water. So viruses are everywhere. And they actually, why would God create viruses? They actually perform a useful function in, kind of keeping bacteria in check, among other things. You know, and there's debate as to whether viruses are even alive. I don't really think they are, you know, because a virus is basically a little tiny piece of DNA, very specific DNA that is coated with a protein. And so it invades your cell, it invades the cell and then kind of turns on the copy machine. You know, and it starts making copies of itself, and then that infects other cells, and, you know, the other cells start pumping out copies of the virus. And eventually your immune system kicks in and kind of cleans it all up. Then you become immune to that particular virus. That's how I understand it. So, but, you know, but there is a lot of, you know, that's the latest sort of mass hysteria that's kind of happening. And, you know, I prefer not to play in that field. You know, I don't want to, you know, whatever. I'm not going to alter my own behavior or, you know, fear going out in public, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, stuff's around, and, you know, either your immune system handles it or it doesn't. Now, another video that I watched, the guy was saying that if you have high sugar, if you eat lots of sugar, sugary stuff, you have a lot, you know, end up with too much glucose in your system. That, you know, viruses seem to reproduce a lot more if you have lots of glucose. So that's present in your blood, you know, in your body. So that's another reason to cut out the carbohydrates. Among others. So, by the way, I weighed while I was home, and I'm, you know, lowest that I've seen so far, 151.8. So my weight is still maybe so slowly creeping downward, which is, you know, really remarkable. You know, I was happy with 155, you know, but it still seems to be creeping down very slowly. You know, so, you know, and that, you know, was from the very most I've ever weighed was about 225. And, you know, so that's pretty remarkable. And I'm, you know, really, really happy to continue eating, you know, meats and vegetables and salads, what have you. That kind of diet works great for me, you know, and sans the desserts and pastas and potatoes, rice and bread and all that crap. Don't need it. Not missing it. You know, so, but there's still plenty of people eating it. The load, you know, that short load that I had today that I picked up in Irving, Texas and delivered in Dallas, it was a load of candy. The load that I picked up that I have right now and that I picked up in Waco, Texas, is a that I'm taking to Joliet, Illinois, is a load of candy. God knows how many, how much sugar, you know, just tons of it, literally. So somebody's still eating it. I'm not. But so, but it's best, I don't know, it's really best for me anyway, to simply, you know, kind of disengage from all that stuff and, you know, kind of go on with my existence. My existence is pretty good. You know, I'm pretty happy. whatever happy is, I'm happy. But, you know, the people that are filled with rage, filled with resentment, are, you know, they may try to pretend like they're happy or whatever, but they're really not. They're miserable and they want everybody else to be miserable, whether they realize it or not. So, anyhow, better be cutting this off. Hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.